Hello, it's Kathy Love here. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. It's my pleasure to share up more private practice stories and wisdom in this, our third season. My guests are generous, creative, and honest. It has been such a joy to be able to hold these conversations and capture these moments for your listening pleasure. We're sure that you'll really enjoy these unplugged chats and these private practice heart-to-hearts. So settle in, let's get the conversation started.
Hello, it's Kathy Love here. And on this episode of the podcast, we have a very fast-paced, somewhat dashing conversation with Ingrid Moyle, the owner of Australian Employee Manual and Heart Harmony Communications. She has two favourite children. Now, we go through a lot of content and ideas, and I'm just going to give you the heads up that there's some really good stuff in this conversation. We talk about how to generate content for your business, the value of doing so, and how you can use that content across quite a few different channels. We also talk about the power of communication, whether it's communication with your clients or whether it's communications in-house within your team. Ingrid is the queen of policies and procedures, and we chat about how really strong systems can help buy your freedom, build team autonomy, and help position your business for growth. Her commitment to policies and procedures is founded in her wonderful product, which is a HR and workplace health and safety manual that's commercially available. We're going to try and remember to put the link in the show notes so you can have access to that good stuff. We also got a bit distracted with the NDIS because I've spoken with Ingrid about the audit process that businesses are working towards, and we talk about the value and the long-term gains in that process. And finally, Ingrid asks me a ripper of a question right at the end of the podcast. And I really want you to hang in all the way through and listen to my answer. I know you're going to enjoy this. Today on the podcast, we have Ingrid Moyle. And it's taken me a couple of minutes to figure out how to introduce her because she's so busy and so awesome across so many different areas. So Ingrid is the owner of the Australian Employee Manual and also Heart Harmony Communications. Welcome, Ingrid.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Now, this is very formal for us. The conversations that we've had in the past have been sort of with me banging my head in a hotel room about something or other, or you dealing with a maintenance issue. And so it's lovely to have a bit of uninterrupted time to be able to share what you do. So thank you for carving out some time.
That's not a problem. I'm really looking forward to having a chat because our chats have been brilliant. We just sort of head off into different tangents and solve the problems of the world.
Yes, yes. Tangents seem to be our forte. So in case listeners are nervous, we actually have a checklist of things that we're going to try and stick to make it really useful and interesting for your earbuds. Ingrid, where did your business start?
Okay. So many, 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 many moons ago, I went back I was at university, and I was always intrigued by how people thought, what made them tick, what made them do what they wanted to do, and particularly problems around communication. How could we have effective communication? So I started by studying in psychology and industrial relations. I had in my head this vision of becoming a research psychologist, but then derailed into the world of industrial relations and found that fabulous. And so for the first 25 odd years, I was working in large government organisations at sort of executive level in human resources, primarily organisation development, but also flipping between that and working in employment relations. So I worked in everything from the Queensland Industrial Commission through to peak employer bodies and unions. I sort of worked my way around the spectrum until finally I had a little epiphany and went out into my own sort of consulting type practice, primarily again in HR side of things, until one day I had one of those days I was working with a large pharmacy practice, and I'd had three different people come to talk to me that day. First one had complained about the pleats in front of their uniform trousers and could we please have flat pleats. The second one was a manager saying, could you please tell that person down there in the staff room to stop eating tuna? It makes the staff room smell. And the third one was reminding me that it was Christmas party season, so I needed to roll out sexual harassment training so that the staff members weren't going to get attacked by some of the lecherous staff when they'd had a few grogs. And that was my thing that made me go, I actually don't want to do practical HR, hands-on HR anymore. So I went to the boss and said to him, I had in my head I was going to say, I wish to go part-time because I really wanted to be paid to write. That was my thing. And then I walked up to him, looked at him straight in the eye, and I said, I wish to resign. Well, Freud would have been very, very proud of me that day. And so he just said, yes, of course, okay, that's good for you. And so I thought, well, that's obviously what I needed to do. So I left the world of straight HR and moved into being paid to write. So I actually now have both parts to my business. One's a HR side of things and one is a copywriting web development side. So how it started was Freud. I blame Freud for everything.
Yes. And some very typical workplace behaviours around end of year tuna and the uniform. How often do they not come up?
It's quite remarkable. The number of conversations I had over the years about staff with body odour, staff coming in hungover, all of those, it's very common. It doesn't matter what size business, you're going to have some lovely, awkward conversations.
Yeah, or what decade. So let's have a little bit of a look at each of your businesses. Talk us through Heart Harmony Communications.
Fantastic, yeah. So Heart Harmony Communications, it's primarily a copywriting and web development business. Now people go, well, how is that? How can you do that plus HR? The whole thing is there's a common theme throughout the two different the practices. It's all about making the complex simple, and it's all about how do we have effective communication. So if you're in HR, you're communicating to your staff. You're trying to sell them on particular behaviours, particular actions, moving them towards a particular goal. If you're talking about it from a marketing perspective, you're trying to sell to your clients and getting them to move towards a particular goal. You're trying to explain what you're doing in a way that your customers get. So the theme is consistent. You're actually just looking at how do you influence and how do you change behaviour. So in Heart Harmony Communications, we work primarily with startups and small to medium-sized businesses, helping them to refine their message and putting it in a way that customers get. In the employee manual side of things, we're doing the same thing. It's all about taking systems and processes and communicating it to your staff in a way that the staff get. Does that help?
Absolutely. I want to just we're derailing from our topics already because it's so good to have your undivided attention and to be able to share this. Back to the heart communication and the content writing and the website. That just goes together like magic. What should Allied Health business owners be really doing in the content marketing space, do you think?
Okay. So we've seen a shift in how people engage with content or engage with businesses. So a few years ago, five years ago, everybody's communication as a business was all almost like a brochure. Their internet, their websites were just basically an electronic brochure. What we're seeing now with the shift in terms of artificial intelligence, so people now will ask questions of Google if they're going to Google. So they'll sort of say, find me a cheap Chinese restaurant near here, or who has the best coffee. So they're question based. Interrogations of the system. So that means that how we present information to the consumer has to change. We can't just say, here's our information, we want you to read it. You now need to flip your thinking in terms of what questions are people asking, how can we provide the best and most complete answer to those questions. And so it doesn't matter whether it's Siri or Ask Google or Alexa or what have you, people are asking questions. That your presence on the net is how do you provide the best answer? So content marketing now is not about thinking of stuff to force down your followers' throats. It's more about what's the common questions and how do you answer that? That becomes your content. And so easy ways to do that is just literally looking at the caseload that you have in front of you. What are the common issues that are being presented that week or that month? Is there something that you can do to provide them with core information that's factual and correct and simple about that particular issue? And yes, refer to other sources. You don't have to be the fount of all wisdom. It's all about helping and distilling that information into one place so people know that they can trust you to give them the best possible facts.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's about being friendly and helpful and really deeply understanding your customers and your future customers and what their kind of challenges are.
Mm. It's all about connecting. It's almost like as a friend over coffee. So it's a few years ago, we would talk to our neighbours and we'd say, hey, who do you know that's really good at doing painting of particular, you know, high eaves? Now you go to Google and say, can you tell me a painter near me who paints high eaves? And so the question is changed. So the internet has become your friendly neighbour over the fence, and it's about you chatting to them.
Yeah, yeah. Who has access to even more data and possibly less bias than the friendly neighbour over the fence?
And that's it. People are looking for short snippets of information. So if you're doing an answer, long blog posts and long content works, but you have them in digestible chunks so people can get answers to multiple questions, if you like, in that one little snippet that you've written. But it has to be in a written, conversational, friendly way. It's about taking out the stuffy starch from your writing and talking like a human being.
Yeah. And allied health professionals, we're trained to be quite formal and we kind of have this professional backbone, and it can be quite uncomfortable for us to release that sort of, I'm going to use the word expert, and that expertise and that medical kind of neurology stuff, blah, blah, whatever, to actually kind of casualize it all and be available and friendly and vulnerable and all of these other things.
Being real.
Yeah.
And it is really hard. That what I find is that when you've been trained in that particular modality, if you start writing, your brain automatically goes to academic mode. If you're having a conversation with someone, so if you're talking to a patient in front of you or a client, you don't talk in that same way. You don't automatically go into academic mode. You actually talk in a conversational way and you bring things up. Mm. So quite often people are having that block is, I'll say, imagine that you've got a patient in front of you and record yourself talking to that person. And then transcribe your recording, because you will not speak in a stuffy starch way. You'll actually speak in a conversational tone of voice. And so that's a way around it.
Yeah, and it's work in progress. I think for many, we'll just use the word technicians, to be able to kind of release that and step into something that might feel almost unprofessional or not professional enough. So, work in progress. I didn't realise till just the other week that you actually write content for people. That was a minor revelation.
Oh, it's good fun. It's part of our role is, it's like going back to high school. We want 500 words, please, on electrical engineering safety on construction projects. And so you just you put your mind, you just literally stick on a hat as an electrical engineer and off you go. And you do your research and you write your 500 words. So that part's fun, because my brain flicks from one to the other and it allows me to learn, which is just fabulous, about everything from, I've worked, spoken for neurosurgeons or written in their voice right the way through to, I've just finished writing for an author and launching her book. So while she's good at writing books, she's bad at writing about herself. And so it's, you put yourself into somebody else's shoes.
Good.
And speak with their voice.
Because you get in your own way with all of that sort of stuff, and you just overthink it. So therefore, it's just dumb and hopeless, and you just don't do it, and you procrastinate,
and you end up sounding you sound like a dreadful Tinder profile half the time. And so, writing about yourself is, and all the psychologists would know, that whole concept of self-awareness is really quite challenging, which is why you quite often need a reflective mirror to bounce off, to actually to show you the pieces of the edges that you're not seeing or that's hidden from your view. So having someone that you can bounce off and to help reflect that back to you, and show you in your best light sometimes helps.
And also, I could imagine it would leave you with a bit of a style guide in terms of the sort of words and phrasing and pace and whatever all those literacy words are that you could then kind of
work with
a bit of confidence and, roll forward yourself.
And it's the thing is having someone who listens to you and can hear what you say and your patterns and reflect those words back to you. When someone writes for you, which is why if you go to like their sites like Fiverr or any of those El Cheapos, you get someone who doesn't listen. They'll just take one sentence and then go off and write. And so there's a disconnect between how you speak and then the words that you are allegedly saying. And people can sense that. They can sense it's totally inauthentic. So having someone who can listen to you and use your speech patterns and reflect back, that way you're actually getting a more authentic response.
Yeah, absolutely. So last time we spoke, we also talked about newsletters. We are so down a content rabbit hole at the moment. and it was really, really interesting what you said. And, we're in a mode of continuous improvement with our newsletter. And this month's newsletter looks very different from last month's and incredibly different from beforehand. And the metrics are actually supporting these changes. So a public thank you to you, Ingrid, for
glad to help
setting me straight on all of that a few weeks ago. What's your prediction for newsletters of the future?
Newsletters are just going to be one form of communication. So people absorb data in different ways. Some people love to get the newsy chats in their inboxes. Some people still use social media as their filter, so they want to see similar information but in a slightly different format through Facebook or whatever the social media they're absorbing. Other people want to see the same information by video chat, live broadcast or what have you. So when you're looking at information, you can't do one only. A few years ago, it used to be just those newsletters. That was it. Yeah. Now it's this and this and this. But when you're looking at the ands, find the one that matches your personal style. So if you're not a raving extrovert who feels comfortable in camera, Facebook Live's probably not for you. So work your communication with your personal communication preference styles, but still look at multiple modalities to get your messages out. So that's a long way of saying, yes, newsletters still have value and they will still exist, but they're only going to be one channel.
Yeah. And that it's okay to repurpose your content across different channels.
Definitely.
So a blog can be a blog. It can be a series of tweets. It can be a little few micro blogs with some beautiful images. You could talk it to camera or so on and so forth.
Very much so. Because it takes a lot to create a piece of content. Mm-hmm. And so recycling is very important in all parts of life. You've put a lot of blood, sweat, tears and thought into this. How can you repurpose each piece into different formats to hit different audiences? Because all you're doing is you're being generous and you're creating different opportunities for people to engage with your message. You're not saying, this is the only way that I'm going to talk to you. You're actually giving options for people to get your information in a way that works for them.
Yeah, that's easy and convenient and bite-sized and, the length of the blog is relevant, the length of the Facebook Live is relevant.
And
it's about attention span shrinks and shrinks and shrinks.
It is funny because while people say the attention span is shrinking, and which is why social media tends to be in shorter pieces tend to work. However, blog posts, the thing that engage, are the longer posts. The 300 to 500 words probably aren't, that they won't get you the actual Google results. What's now working are the longer, more thorough, well-considered reports because people consume that when they're commuting to or from work. They'll sit and read and they will actually read and engage in a longer piece because it's something that's giving them total solutions for that particular issue that they're looking for. So don't be afraid of length. Just pick your mark where you're going to be putting that piece of that longer content.
Yeah, and with the objective of repurposing it in lots of places. And remember that some content that you develop is evergreen, which means you can maybe just update a little bit but bring it out again. And bring it out
definitely.
Again. Seasonal, topical, whatever.
And so when you move to that that answering questions approach of your content, then yes, a large portion of your content becomes evergreen because people are always going to have a problem with cleft palate, for example. If you've got a new baby, what's the things that you can best do to help a mum with a new baby with cleft palate? That's going to be a common issue that is going to continue, and it's not something that's only lasting for 2 months. Yeah. And so it's about thinking the questions, the common questions that people always ask, and then finding answering them for those people.
I love nothing more than that moment when I'm in a little bit of a content drought and I sort of remember to look back at what I've done already. A, that it's a little bit of a moment of pride and complete disbelief, but there's really always something in there that was a little unfinished or has got a part B or that I can just update to 2018 or whatever it is. And you forget the back library.
I totally agree. I usually say do a side audit on your content, but right across all of your website at least once a year. You need to go back through everything that you've written once a year. Is it still current? Is it still valid? Is it still legal in a lot of areas? And then do you need to refresh it? Do you need to extend it? Do you need to trash it? Those are the three questions that you're asking on all of your content.
Yeah, good reminder. We're very pleased with ourselves over at Naked Consulting. We've got all of the blogs in a spreadsheet.
So I can
pretty much easily see them at a glance. I've just got to remember to look at the spreadsheet.
Yes, you've got to do it. My recommendation is usually Friday night with a glass of wine and you just quietly look through your stuff. You just pick a night.
Oh, good. We've had another podcast episode with the mention of wine. You're on point. So the conversation so far has been about communicating with current and future customers and even referral partners, stakeholders and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And with communication as the segue, the other amazing part of what you do, I wouldn't say how you do it all, is the Australian Employee Manual business. So give us a run through
So that one came about was because when I sort of was segueing into the writing, it didn't matter what I was doing. Every business that I walk into say, hey, have you got some policy procedures that you've got from your history, please? And just dust them off and give them to me. And so it got to the point where I was getting asked so often that I ended up creating the policy and procedures manual and employee policies and procedures manual. And I wrote it specifically for small to micro and not-for-profits. And so it's a series of templates of all of the policies and procedures that if you're hiring a staff member, you need to have in place to tackle pretty much every HR issue that's going to get thrown at you. It's been going now for, good grief, nearly about 13 years. Every year or a couple of times a year we'll update depending on what's happening in the scenario. And people will ask us to extend. So, for example, and then what we'll do is we'll add a new policy based on their requests. And so we had a lot of interest in domestic violence. What happens if someone's involved or experiencing domestic violence in a workforce for your staff member? How should you as a manager handle it? So we created a policy around that. We had another company that was struggling because they had a transgender team member and didn't know how they should manage that and how they could be supportive and empathetic to the team member as well as the rest of the staff. And so we helped create a transgender policy for them. And so there was the standard HR manual came about from there. But we also last week launched a special one for the NDIS. We're looking for people who are choosing to self-manage and direct employ, because when under the NDIS, if someone chooses to employ their own support workers, they automatically become an employer just under the legislation, which means that they're suddenly a small business in many ways, and a lot of them were struggling with what does that mean? How do I comply with all of the legal laws and legislation and rights regulations in a way that they could get? So we created a second product just on the HR side of things, just for the NDIS self-managers. And then we have a third product, which is all about performance management. One of my specialities was working doing performance management from executive right through to the smallest trainee in multiple organisations. And so it's about how do you do performance management in a positive, using a positive frame and talking you through some basic skills, because it's a book plus a whole series of MP4 recordings on how do you build your core skills doing performance reviews. and had particularly those white knuckle reviews that all managers have to do. And so that's all in the employee manual side of things.
Amazing. It's the most incredibly thorough yet easy to use resource.
Thank you.
Who purchases it?
It's everywhere from, we've got some opera companies right through to mining companies. A lot of law firms use it, accountants. It is in a lot of allied health. We have a significant number of psychologists, speeches, OTs are using that particular manual as well, right across Australia, because the core workplace relations laws are fairly consistent. The core laws are the national ones, but there's still some variances. For example, in workplace surveillance, that varies from state to state. Workplace health and safety isn't yet fully unified, which is why we have some core stuff in the manual that is still relevant to all states, but each state has its variants. So you'll still need to add your specific take on it, or your things to comply in your particular state for your particular workplace health and safety. I've yet to find a product that can do that's consistent, that is good enough to be able to cover everybody, because a mine is very different to a psychology practice, and so they have different workplace health and safety needs.
There's probably some elements of similarity between those books.
Definitely. Safety.
Have you got any suggestions for how business owners can work through the documents? So, yes, they're beautiful and they're easy to use and they're friendly, but there's a lot of pages as there needs to be.
There is a lot, yeah.
And there's sort of the, oh, my goodness, now I really have to do it. How can that good stuff happen?
Usually I joke with a lot of our people at Purchase and I say the first thing you do is you kill the tree, print off the lot and disappear to the nearest coffee shop with a highlighter and pen in hand and tell them to bring coffee. If it's a weekend, then there's more wine involved. But then you just literally scan through to start with and you go, okay, for example, yes, we do staff discount or no, we don't. Put a line through that. If we're looking at sick leave, if someone's going to be sick, do we want them to ring Mary at the front desk by 7 in the morning or do we want them to text me by 8? And so it's just a case of jotting through and making quick notations in the side of the documentation to try and help you to figure just as a quick and dirty run through as to how do we do things around here. That's the fastest way to sort it, and then you just do your merge your comments back into Word because they come in Word format. We're very much about keeping it simple without fancy software that and things that can block people from engaging with the information, and then just make your edits from there. But there is a lot in there because it does cover a lot of in many ways it also helps to train you on your responsibilities. When you're going through it, you go, oh, I didn't know I needed to do that bit. And then we try and help you to give you context about what you have to do and here's some ways to do that in your workplace. So there's a lot of information in it.
So the pen and paper and colours and post-it notes.
Colours and post-it notes.
Overall visual of what's in there.
Yeah, because people always say to me, well, why do we need this policy and procedures? Can't we just do it? Don't we only just need like about 3? And I usually say to them, it's like, I want you to imagine for a moment, for example, that there's overnight every single recipe in the world disappeared. Think of a cooking analogy. Every recipe, all of your cookbooks have disappeared. The back of the packet recipes have all disappeared. The internet, every single recipe on the internet has suddenly gone into the ether and you have to cook dinner. How are you going to do that? And so the only ways you can do it are either from memory, so you remember a recipe and then you cook from it, or you go and ask somebody who has cooked that recipe before and you get them to talk you through it. What would happen would be absolute chaos because you've missed a step, you've missed an ingredient, you've done something around the wrong way. That poor person who remembered the recipes would be bombarded by people saying, hey, can you tell me how to do that thing again? And so they would become the keeper of knowledge and everybody would go to them to say, talk me through that step again. And what was that ingredient again? What was the process? You'd have failed cakes. You'd have some problems all over the place. Your policies and procedures manual is your business's cookbook. That's
exactly
why
the analogy I use. Did you know that?
Is it really?
Yeah.
There you go.
Talk about your business recipes so that you can get things done quickly and easily and consistently.
And that's it. So it's about it. The reason you have it is that whole consistency and saving time. So you've got one process that's being followed. you're setting clear boundaries around this is how we do things around here. And the other piece that you're doing with it is that you're just, is you're being clear to your staff that here is the source of all wisdom. You do not need to speak to me about every possible thing, yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yep.
Protecting your particular time. So you're not the person that everybody's coming to say, what was that process again? There's a manual there that they can actually have a look through. So you're actually, it's about protecting you in the process as well, your time and your value, so you can spend time doing core business.
And that serves as a reminder that developing your policies and procedures are a ticket to freedom or more freedom down the track, but it's a sizable amount of work up front that will then pay dividends in building autonomy right across your team and safety and quality and all of that other good stuff as well. But most of all, it's one of the most powerful steps to reclaim your time, but also position your business to grow.
Yeah, it's because if it's just you and one staff member, then yes, they can remember. You've had that conversation. Once you started to have a couple of staff, then that's when you start to see the dividends really, really kick on, because you're getting that consistency of approach and consistency of purpose. So it does give you that freedom.
Yeah. I think the last time we spoke, Ingrid, I was explaining to you about allied health business owners in the disability sector and the audit requirements that are now being required by the NDIS. And since we spoke, I was going to forward them to you. I don't think I remember. The NDIS practice standards have been delivered
along with
quality indicators as well.
Yep.
So there's a lot of business owners out there looking at the whiteboard and wondering where to start. And I'm helping, with a colleague. We've got a few products in place. But
brilliant.
Have you got some words of wisdom for how to kind of put love into the hearts of allied health business owners as they throw themselves into this audit process?
Okay. That one's tricky. It's the process that the allied health businesses are going through are very similar to what the pharmacies went through a number of years ago when they were moving through their quality accreditation process. And so in theirs, they would have an external auditor would come in every 2 years to make sure that protocols and processes were in place in terms of refrigeration, medication, and what have you. It sounded simple, but there was massive amount of textbooks, massive amount of books, massive amount of checklists, massive amount of processes. And I'm not going to lie to you, it is hard work to make sure that you're compliant. The only saving grace is that it does make you stop and think about your business, think about how do we do things around here? Are we delivering the best possible practice for our clients? And using the process of accreditation and the process of review as a way of ensuring that you are delivering your vision of your practice. Now, there's what I found with the pharmacists is we had two different schools of thought with the pharmacists. One group was that let's just get this over with and make sure I've got everything ticked off. For those people, their mental approach was that it was a nightmare. It was just horrible. Something that had to be done. And so they went in with a "I hate this" approach, and it was like they carried a big rock on their heads and rock on their back about this process. The other pharmacist went in with a "Okay, I'm wanting to improve my particular pharmacy. I want to improve my practice. We may as well use this process as a way of improving the culture in my organisation in the team or the clinic." And making sure that we were delivering the best possible service. So they just used the accreditation as a tool to deliver cultural change. Those are the ones that actually got the best results, because they were just using this purely as a forced tool that said, in this time frame you're going to be doing this. They used it as a discipline to improve their practice and their clinic. And so it's about choosing your mindset. Are you going to go in with a compliance mindset, or are you going to go in with a growth mindset? Make your choice and go down that path and be really conscious about your choice.
Oh, love it. Love it. We can go out for lunch on that. That's genius. Thank you. Thank you for that. And it's such a reminder about revisiting why we went into business in the first place and digging back into that good stuff and, thinking about the opportunities and dialing up the optimism and it isn't necessarily what we want to be doing. There are plenty of other things allied health professionals would rather be doing.
Yeah.
But I think deep down many business owners listening know that they should have been doing some of this stuff for the last few years anyway.
So, and that's why it rankles.
A little bit of guilt and anxiety and chocolate-covered guilt sitting there thinking, okay, so now business is getting serious.
Mm. And it is. It's about pulling up your big girl or your big boy pants and just getting on and doing it and saying, okay, this is the time that, yes, we're not just in it as a clinician. We're now looking at it as a whole practice that's delivering to a community. How do we help the community in the best possible way? And this is the way to do it.
Yeah. So with this kind of future-focused topic that we're in at the moment, what is the Australian Employee Manual going to be looking like in years to come? Where's it heading?
That one we're actually allowing to develop in the best possible way. And so it's purely based on feedback. And so it's quite possible that it might become a cloud-based option. We were looking at some partners for that side of things. But we also found at this point that a lot of our micro businesses didn't want a cloud-based option. They still want they need their piece of paper. That's why they needed the Word document. So we're letting demand and community drive us to where we need to go with it and what we next need to tackle. We're purely in the hands of the community. We just listen to the issues and then respond accordingly, whether that's a new product like the NDIS or whether it's a new form of delivery.
Your wish is our command.
Very much so. I keep hoping, and my dream would be that this is all done at a central government level, and it'd be lovely to see that there's a solution that's actually offered at a central level that does this for people. I mean, Fair Work is moving down that path. The Fair Work Ombudsman website is brilliant. There's a lot of information on there. There's alerts that you can join to get told when there's changes to the awards that affect your staff. Definitely sign up for them. So they're moving down that path, but they're still not there yet. There's still significant gaps that they're not addressing, and that's where we fit in. We're just filling in the gaps and operationalising what's out there.
Well, maybe you don't need to remind them about too much at all and just get on with your own awesome.
Oh, no, it's just me and my bigger vision. I always love to think, how could we make this better for people?
Yeah.
And wouldn't it be nice if? And how can we, that's always my bigger dream. When I was in government, it was always, how can we help the community? How do we help the people that we serve?
Mm-hmm. And get them the information they need
in a way that works for them.
Yeah. So your other favourite child, Heart Harmony Communications, what's that going to be looking like going forward?
Again, we vary. It's one of those morphing processes. I think any business that stays the same for any period of time, it's like a straitjacket. It's not a good sign. I always say that with any business, you need to relook similar to your content. When you're looking at your content, you do the same process. You take yourself through a planning process every 12 months to say, is this who we are? Is this still delivering what our clients are looking for? And you're going to adjust every 12 months. Usually every 3 years, I say, blow it up and start again. Whether it's a website, whether it's your business, it's you have to say, okay, the world has changed a lot in 3 years. Is this the right model now? Are we delivering things the right way 3 years down the track? And take a really very solid, shake hard look at what you're doing. That's when the value kicks in and you go, okay, that worked, that didn't work, people are now wanting this, let's shift or shuffle in direction.
Well, that's just such a beautiful definition of agility. We hear the word agility and small business and bootstrap startups and all of this stuff, but sometimes we don't think it applies to us if we're a couple of years in, but it does. It does.
Even more so.
Yeah.
So I used to run strategic planning for some large government organisations, one of the groups in my OD group, and governments do this every 12 months so that they would actually, the executives, you take them away and you don't do kumbaya around the fire anymore, that's passé, but you still take them away to think about who are they, what are they trying to serve, or who are they trying to serve, what's their direction, how do they shift. So if that's, to me, that's, I always look to what is a large corporation doing. That model of gaining clarity and reconnecting with your vision is valid whether you're a single operator or a large government corporation, and you still need to stop and refresh.
And ask yourself, What are the big the big problems that we're working towards? What are the big problems we're trying to solve?
Yep.
I'm looking forward to perhaps a bit more of a hackathon kind of scene in allied health and in small business. Maybe we should do that. I've been in a couple of hackathons and loved it. Loved the blue sky thinking and the ability to build something from scratch that really served a purpose. And if you're unagendered and you let innovation take over, and when you're in a build room with techies and designers and architects and marketing guys, you end up with a very, very different business than if you're in the room with your contemporaries and your allies.
Yeah.
Mates. Yeah. It's really fascinating.
I love that idea because it does force you to, it shakes you out of groupthink.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
Yes. Ooh, well, there's something we can...
We can play with that.
Play with? Yeah. Well, stay tuned, people. Stay tuned. So, thank you. Thank you. I've just thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I have a page of notes, so I've got things to think about. When I remember, I give guests on my podcast, and I've remembered today, the chance to ask me a question. And I don't even know if you even knew that you could do that. But is there anything not too curly that you want to ask me, or even curly?
Oh, I didn't know that I could do that one.
Oh, take a moment.
So for me, I suppose the biggest one is all of your client base. Is there a consistent overarching problem across all of the allied health that you go, if they could just address that one thing, all of their businesses would step up?
Oh, what a ripper. What a ripper. My initial thinking went straight to the fact that allied health business owners don't realise how wonderful they are.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And that they don't think that they're worthy of investing in their business self, and that there is a really understandable default that if I'm a better clinician, the business will do better.
Yep.
But I just have this hunch, and I'm on the awareness campaign, as you know, that if you got a bit of help earlier, if you got some input, if you really invested in your management and leadership self, I have a really strong belief that business and life could be even more vibrant and effective for them.
I agree. I think you're spot on there. It's like if you're a clinician, for example, a physiotherapist, and you see people that have had a niggling pain for years, and they think, if I just maybe lose a couple of kilos, or I can manage this, I'll be fine, I'll take Nurofen. But then they go to a physiotherapist, get treatment, and they actually do the exercises that you suggest to them, and they find they suddenly can move freely without pain. If they'd done that years ago, they would be with it. They would have had those benefits years ago. To me, that whole being a better clinician doesn't make you better at business. Having better knowledge having better knowledge was all it took, then the librarians of the world would be all the millionaires.
Yeah.
Knowledge isn't it. It's about how do you be a better owner of your business. Yes, build your core skills as a clinician, but you also need to build your other skills as a business. They two go together. There was a very old marketer that I loved. His name was Winnow Marsh. I think he's still alive. And he taught me a number of years ago, which was you have to be a better marketer of what you do than a doer of what you do. Mm-hmm. And if you get that piece in place and you go, okay, originally I rankled with that, that really grated for me, but then I realized it's all about that communication, because unless you can communicate what you do, doesn't matter how great a clinician you are, if you can't communicate it, clients won't engage with you, you won't build your practice, you won't build your business. So you've got to start with that. You have to be a better business owner than a clinician in many ways to get ahead and with smooth and ease.
Oh, I'm just going to leave it right there. That is just such a beautiful point to finish on. Ingrid Moyle, thank you so much.
No,
I think we'll get you back later on and find out what the latest is. But thank you so much for joining the conversation today.
Thanks, Kathy. I appreciate it.
Thank thank you for investing your time right through to the end of this episode of Private Practice Secrets. If you're running a private practice and keen for more business confidence and management know-how, head on over to our website, nacre.com.au. I'll spell it, nacre.com.au. Over there, you'll find all sorts of business resources and inspiration, blogs, forms, web events, freebies, our virtual conference information, workshops, and more. And don't be shy. Take advantage of the free power call and book yourself into my diary for the chance to have a business chat and to pick my brains. I'm Kathy Love, Allied Health Business Coach, wishing you and your business a brilliant day.